Tested is sponsored by Duke Health, home of the Pandemic Response Network, helping communities stay safe and connected during the COVID-19 pandemic by partnering with local school, business, and faith-based organizations to launch COVID-19 system support programs in their own communities. Learn more at pandemicresponsenetwork.org. Tested is also sponsored by Hungry Harvest, delivering farm-fresh produce and kitchen staples to your door starting at $15. Every delivery fights food waste and supports local hunger-solving organizations. HungryHarvest.net.
I actually have some personal recriminations about potentially taking a vaccine out of the arm of a North Carolina resident for whom it was intended.
I'm Leonida Inge. This is Test It from WUNC, a look at what the day's challenges tell us about where we are, what we believe, and who we want to be in North Carolina and the South. Today, vaccine entitlement. John from Virginia Beach went on the record about cutting line and crossing state lines to get the vaccine, although he wasn't willing to share his full name. But he's not alone, by any means. So who else has broken in line to get a dose before their group number? I know, it's something you may not want to brag about. Life or death reasons? Or maybe just an opportunity landed in your lap? I understand. How about this? Anybody out there knows someone who got a COVID vaccine shot before they were supposed to? Someone who is not a healthcare worker, someone younger than 65. The reason I ask is because in North Carolina, close to 80% of those vaccinated so far are white. Less than 15% are black. That's higher than it was a couple of weeks ago, but still not representative of the number of African Americans living here, and who are disproportionately getting sick and dying of COVID. There have been many complaints about this disparity, so just like when tons of poor black and brown people didn't have equitable access to COVID testing, the community has to step in.
It was just a blessing. I mean, because we didn't even think about, you know, how many. We just thought we could do it. So we just mobilized resources to get it done.
Jeff Brown is chairman of the Deacon Board at the historically black St. Matthew Baptist Church in Raleigh. He said it was imperative to open the doors to the church for their older members. Earlier this month, they partnered with health groups and the state to administer 500 doses of the COVID vaccine.
What made this so easy for them, not only because they hadn't been to church in a while, but feeling they're coming home and able to get the vaccination, and the pastor and first lady were the first ones in the chair. So they were the first ones this morning that got vaccinated.
Amen. Deacon Brown says everything worked out great in the end, but it didn't start out that way. Registering old people for the vaccine, especially those who are not tech savvy and don't have a loved one to walk them through the process, can be...
It's just a lot of stress. I've talked to some where they're up 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, trying to get into the system because they thought it would be a good time. And still not able to get in. And so they were actually registered when they got to here this morning. So that's just raised the anxiety level when they get here.
Alisa Washington was one of the last people to get her vaccine the day I visited St. Matthew. She wasn't having luck signing up at other sites.
It was like I was getting picked out of the lottery. You know, it's just a wonderful thing to happen. And it's so overwhelming when you think about the number of people out here in the world and that everyone needs to be vaccinated. Even though a lot of people choose not to, still there's overwhelming numbers of people to be vaccinated. And when I got the opportunity, I just grasped onto that, and I'm very glad that I did, and I'm overjoyed.
Earlier this week, I participated in a Facebook Live event with Cardinal and Pine, a North Carolina-based progressive news organization. I was glad to be able to talk vaccine rollout with Ben Money, Deputy Secretary of Health Services at the State Department of Health and Human Services.
The bottom line is there's just not enough vaccine to go around. We've got much more demand than we have supply. The feds, you know, their approach to distributing vaccines is really based on a percentage of the population. And if we didn't achieve speed, we were really going to lose out on having a population percentage allocation of doses. So focused on speed, and we moved North Carolina very quickly towards being number six in the nation. So got speed right, and we're able to get all the doses administered in arms in the course of a week.
I'm a journalist and a Black woman who has seen people and family members suffer from COVID-19. And if ever there was a time for a concrete rollout plan to be in place, now is that time.
One of the things that we saw as a result of that is that, you know, folks that had access to the internet or had access to unlimited phone minutes, had the savvy to be able to navigate appointment schedules at the various providers and get an appointment or even travel to some of the larger vaccination sites or events to travel across counties we even saw, were able to get their vaccines. And what that led to was inequality in terms of the demographics of folks being vaccinated. So, you know, when you think about North Carolina, you know, 21% of our population is African-American, 10% Hispanic, Latinx, about 2% are American Indians, Native Americans. And we didn't see that proportionality in terms of folks getting vaccinated. We saw 80% of folks being vaccinated were white and about 10% being African-American and really fewer than 2% being Hispanic, Latinx. So a real need to shift our approach to how we direct the federal government to allocate vaccines to providers and really put an emphasis on speed and equity. And in as a result of that, over the last 3 weeks, we've significantly moved the needle in terms of the equitable distribution of vaccines.
Ben, when you said, you know, about some savvy folks out there who've been able to really use the system to their advantage, I'm like, it's not just savvy. They're, you know, they're white, they're higher income. They're the term that I see all the time. I keep it on my post-it notes here. Just this vaccine entitlement, you know, so if I get it, no matter what the rules say, I'm going to, you know, call my friends too. I mean, you know, because, you know, I live in a world where I've had to really depend a lot on merit and not who you know. But this is like the worst case of who you know I've ever seen. I'm like, really? Really? We have to, you know, lean on. And as a matter of fact, people who I know feel that they were supposed to get a vaccine or they needed their parents or grandparents to get a vaccine, they're trying to skip line. It's like, okay, this whole system is about line skipping, right? And that's what I think is in a lot of people's heads right now. And I wish it weren't. I wish people could wait their turn or their time, but I don't know if this has been considered when we think about this vaccine.
And so one of the things that we've encouraged is for vaccinating providers to set aside appointments, you know, so that people from communities, historically marginalized communities, Black and brown people, can get vaccines. So, you know, making sure that they reach their equity targets, because if they don't, then we're going to reallocate vaccine to other providers. I mean, that's how aggressive we are right now in trying to make sure that we get at equity. Because if we don't lean into it hard, we're never going to reach those targets. And, you know, in the last 2 weeks, we've moved from, and this is cumulative, you know, a 10% for African Americans to now 14.5%. So the needle is moving in the right direction. And we're working through our department with case managers we have on board that are actually looking at each provider's performance on a weekly basis. You know, how are they reaching those equity totals? We give them equity bumps for counties and areas where we know based on the data, there are high numbers of low income people over 65, people of color over 65 years of age. We're using that demographic data to direct where our allocations go and then utilizing providers that we know have historic relationship with the community, like our federally qualified health centers. And they've done a fantastic job. I was just on a call with OIC in Rocky Mount, and they had an event over the weekend where they administered over 300 vaccines. And all of those vaccines went to people of color, African-Americans, Latinx. And the way that they did that was they worked with community organizations to actually call members of their organization, people in the community, so that they actually had an appointment schedule for that event with names in it of people that came and got their vaccines. And every one of the vaccines they had available was a shot in the arm for someone. They had a great turnout. And we're seeing that replicated in other parts of the state as well. And like you said, Leonita, it's not a surprise that, you know, churches and community organizations know their membership and can get them mobilized. You know, it's the efforts now to make sure that that happens so that, you know, before we move into another group that that are harder to reach, you know, particularly some folks that may be sick or maybe shut in, that have the opportunity to get that vaccine.
Ben Money is Deputy Secretary of Health Services at the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services. You can watch the whole conversation on the Cardinal and Pine Facebook page. Okay, North Carolina and states across the country all say they're doing their best with the vaccine distribution model they have. And one thing we know, every state gets to tweak the rules however they want. For example, in more than 25 states, teachers are already able to get a vaccine. Opportunity is a word I hear and return to a lot when reporting on the rollout. For a better idea about some of the people who have skipped the vaccine line because they could, I spoke with WUNC data reporter Jason DeBruin. He works in partnership with the North Carolina Watchdog Reporting Network. Their sniffing around has come to this conclusion. Speed and equity are in conflict with each other, an issue exacerbated by the quickly expiring nature of the vaccine and the near impossibility of policing every vaccine clinic.
There have been some egregious examples. I mean, we've seen, like in New Hanover County, all of the county commissioners received vaccines. In Ashe County, actually, there was a group of clinic workers who took some of the vaccine home to their to give to their friends and family. There've been some other examples that are just questionable at best. And when it warrants it, DHHS is investigating and telling people to make sure that they're sticking to the proper order. But of course, you have this end of day issue or end of vial issue where we know the vaccine will expire quickly, right? I mean, it has to be kept very cold. And if it's not kept cold, it will expire. And so it's not something where you can just, oh, at the end of the day, I've got whatever 5 doses left in my vial. I'll just save them till tomorrow. That won't work. And so you get to the end of the day, all the people that you've had scheduled to come and get the vaccine have all gone through, and you don't want to waste any vaccine. I mean, gosh, that's the worst of all, would be to waste doses. And then because of that, there seem to be inconsistent policies for how these end of day doses are then administered. But it also just sort of creates a ready-made excuse, if you will, for if, I don't know, a nursing home operator is giving vaccine to friends and family, or even at a you know, health clinic, for instance, if they're able to, oh, well, wink, wink, these were just end of day doses, no big deal. We don't want them to go to waste, right? It's just very difficult to prove what sort of a good faith effort those organizations actually made to try to find, you know, to try to distribute those quote unquote excess doses more equitably.
Well, it's sort of like doing what's right and what's good. You know, it has to be a way to do both of those. And I've heard some ethicists say, you know, if you find out that someplace has some extra doses and, you know they're going to go expire soon, I mean, instead of, you know, getting it yourself, you know, find a neighbor, you know, bring somebody who does fit into the category of definitely need to get that dose. And I think someone at DHHS told me that even though it's hard definitely to police who may get vaccinated before it's time, after they've gotten vaccinated, they definitely know who they are. You know, they know, and they know how old they are because of all the, I guess, the paperwork that you want, you know, one has to fill out in order to get the vaccine. It's not like they're just handing them out and you don't have to sign your name somewhere. So I think, I wonder if maybe, your reporting watchdog, network after the fact, you know, we may have a better picture of who got what vaccines when.
Well, we do know, like I said, I mean, we do know the age breakdown, and more than 70% or right at about 70% of the people who've received the vaccine are 65 and above. And so those are the most vulnerable age groups, right? And so 70% is a pretty high number. I mean, it's not like they're completely being, you know, missed totally. So I don't think the problem of line cutting is widespread, but it is one where you just hit the nail on the head, which is what I've been trying to say, is that, you know, we as a society, I think, could be doing a lot better of thinking about our neighbor, our fellow man, and doing a better job of, yes, if I'm, maybe I can be the tech savvy young person who is staying on top of where the vaccine is going to be and where there's going to be extra doses, so that I can then perhaps drive my neighbor or somebody down the street, or even my own family member who's perhaps an aunt or an uncle who's in that 65 and above category and higher risk, where I can do the legwork, but then benefit a person who's at higher risk. But again, it's difficult. You know, the Watchdog Reporting Network did find a number of examples where it certainly was questionable. But I mean, it's not like it was hundreds of examples, right? Or certainly not thousands. And I think mostly it's just people who are making themselves a little bit luckier and then taking advantage of their ability to put their finger on the scales to increase their luck, so to speak.
Well, is there anything else, another example that really sticks out that you found in your reporting when it comes to vaccine disbursement here?
Well, so I'll just tick through a few. And again, you know, we're not saying that any of these were bad. And in fact, you know, the groups defended them, but they were at least out of order, certainly of what DHHS would recommend. In Chapel Hill, there were UNC basketball coaches who were not 65 who were able to get the vaccine. In Charlotte, Atrium Health scheduled appointments for non-healthcare workers. That was pretty early on. That was actually back when the vaccine had only just arrived. In Durham, some sheriff's deputies are being vaccinated. And in Union in Dare County, teachers and staff were vaccinated because clinics were scheduled prior to the change in vaccination prioritization. And I mean, in each one of these cases, I'm sure somebody could look and say, well, teachers, it's important to vaccinate teachers, and no one's disagreeing with that, but are they at higher or lower risk than someone else, particularly somebody who's older? I mean, DHHS has this vaccine priority for a reason, and the reason is because it wants to get vaccine into the most at-risk populations first, and then healthier populations later, and last, healthier populations of people who are, you know, able to work from home, and for whom it's not as big of a deal to wait a little bit longer. Teachers clearly would fit in that category, I think, and so would restaurant workers, for instance. And while those are people who are valuable to our society and on the, you know, essential workers, so to speak, still they're not as vulnerable to the coronavirus as are the older populations.
WUNC data reporter Jason DeBruin works in partnership with the North Carolina Watchdog Reporting Network. That's it for this episode of Tested. Rebecca Martinez produced this show. Lindsay Foster Thomas is our executive producer. I'm Leonida Inge. Thanks for listening.